Hey there, and welcome back to Push to Be More, where we explore what truly fuels the journey of life. In this conversation, Matt interviews Francisco Gaffney, who shares his journey from growing up in Argentina to moving to Ireland and to eventually starting his own business. He talks about the importance of resilience, the ability to adapt to different circumstances, and also his biggest success, which he attributes to his role as a parent. You can find all the detailed show notes and a complete transcript of this conversation with Francisco over at pushtobemore.com. And hey, while you're there, sign up for our newsletter. Each week we'll send you all the show's insights and links directly to your inbox, absolutely free.
Francisco, welcome to the podcast, man. Great to have you on here. After no one, the listeners won't know, but we've had a fair few technical issues to get this far. Yeah. And you've stuck with me, which is very kind of you. But welcome to Push to Be More, man. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I'm doing very well today. And I appreciate the opportunity to be in your podcast, which is quite impressive.
Oh, it's great. It's great to have you on. And we said in your bio when we introduced you that you've been in Argentina, you've been in Ireland, and now you're in Barcelona.
Yeah.
It's an interesting sort of journey around the world. Are you enjoying Barcelona?
Pretty much, particularly now that we have 27 degrees. And, compared to Ireland, my son is still in Ireland, working right there, and it's 12 degrees or something like that. I say, yeah, I don't miss that summer.
No, not at all. Not on any kind of level. It's 15 degrees here in Liverpool today, right. And at the time of recording, you're kind of like, this. It should be summer. What's going on? And clearly, it isn't. So I can see why you're enjoying the 27 degrees.
Yeah.
I get to fly out to Dallas next week. I'm speaking at an event over there, going to Sub Summit. If anyone's joining us in Sub Summit, it'd be great to see you. Going to Sub Summit, and I'm going to enjoy the whatever it is, 25, 30 degree heat.
I had a chat with somebody yesterday in Austin and was 33 degrees.
Oh, get in.
Yeah. Austin, Texas.
So. Yeah. Beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
Beautiful part of the world. So, Francisco, let's start with my favorite question, actually, to ask everybody. This show is sponsored by PodJunction, which specializes in helping business leaders grow their business with podcasts. So what we'd like to do is ask the podcast question. If you could, if you had your own podcast, right, and you could interview anybody on your podcast, a bit like we're having a conversation now, from your past or your present, the only caveat being that they've had to have had a big impact on your life. Who would be a guest on your show and why?
Impact in my life. That's a big one. I think it's a number of people.
Okay.
I don't know where to pick because I don't quite remember the name of the gentleman, but he wrote 10 books back in the late 800s. And was called the Secret of Successes or something like that. So he went through history, as we know history, and studied all the big names that we know, Alexander Mango, Magno, back in history, back to now, to the time of these writings. And I think that there are 10 books. It costs like $1 million because he wrote those books to teach the people where the success is and where the mindset. And now it's very common to talk about mindset, but at the time, I think that was like how long? Like 120 years ago, talking about mindset, how people thought things through to be successful, I think was revolutionary. And there's a famous phrase that say it's attributed to Tony Robbins' mentor, Jim Rohn, I think it's called.
Yes,
Jim Rohn. He says you are the average of the five people that is around you mostly, but that phrase comes from that book, from that encyclopedia of success. I cannot remember the name, but actually I know that actually is very rare. It was written exclusively for certain families at the time and for them to be more mindful of what success was meaning and how to achieve that much faster and in an easier way without the struggles of the time. Remember that the time was the beginning, well, mid, end of the Industrial Revolution. Mm. So those families say, what is next? What is coming next? Mm. And that guy took the time to write all these things to say, okay, what is coming next? So you are very prosperous. You have you're an industrialist. And then we have the Carnegies and all these guys that came to America. And and many of these guys got these books. So you see the early 1900s, you see a big prosperity also in the world in terms of consciousness. And I remember Carnegie in particular because he said this guy came from Scotland to New York and he built the biggest asset in the world at the time. I think that today, comparable, if you do exchange rates, still one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Known today. All the J.P. Morgans and all these guys that we know today as the big, big names of the early 1900s. I think that this guy would be interesting to interview. What triggered him to do these kind of things? Because I like to go to the root as far as I can of the knowledge. Mm. And for example, when I was into Tony Robbins, I say who teach this guy, because this is coming from somewhere. And then I found Jim Rohn. And when I found Jim Rohn, I found his mentor, which is Lee Hoff or G. Hoff or somebody like that. And then I found this other book, and so then you start to see how the knowledge is transferred, but some people appropriate that knowledge as their own intellectual property, and I don't feel easy with that, because at one point they don't have the whole, the whole integrity, not integrity as a personal integrity in terms of values, but I mean the integrity of the knowledge. At one point... Yeah. The marketing start to fail because actually they don't have the values that triggered that knowledge. They just repeat and rehearse, remarket or repackage the same knowledge in different ways. Mm. Anyway, so that's the person that we bring to.
I think that'd be really interesting. The guy I'm thinking of, I don't know if it's the same guys, because I know what you mean, and I think I can picture Dale Carnegie's book, you know. The How to Make Friends and Influence People, and the other books that came out of that time, like Think and Grow Rich with Napoleon Hill.
Napoleon Hill, yes.
People like that, sort of old school, the original sort of self-help guys, weren't they? They're sort of the old school guys. All books which have had, like I would say, probably one of the most profound books that I've read is How to Make Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
You know, it's an incredible book. It's probably one of the few books that I've insisted my kids read, you know, because I think the principles are still timeless. And the name will come back to me at some point for what I think you're thinking of. And people will be shouting it at the screen or the podcast because I know what you mean. But I think you're right. Some of these sort of old school, original pioneers in, you know, this sort of movement would be really, really interesting people to talk to. You know, just like Elon Musk, who would be a modern day equivalent, would be a really interesting chap to talk to. I think Dale Carnegie, you know, would be extraordinary. Andrew Carnegie, you know, who was attributed as saying he wanted his epitaph to read, "Here lies a man who knew how to hire people smarter than himself." You know, which you think, this is great. Totally with you on that. Totally with you on that. It's an interesting one. So I'm going to find out the answer to that question after we've ended this conversation. I'm going to hit myself in the head for not remembering it during the conversation. Go, why did you not? Anyway. So, you know, Francisco, we read in your bio that, you know, you've been involved in IT, you've been involved in e-commerce and Amazon and selling all over the world. You're now involved in mergers and acquisitions and you know, building growth through acquisition, things like that. What's a key challenge in all of that that you have faced? I'm you know, because it sounds so. It's a wonderful resume to read, but I'm assuming it's not all been that straightforward or linear.
Yeah, no, by far it is not. There's so many things in there. I think, how can I put this? You're really making me think very hard.
Thank you for that.
Because it's interesting that not many times, I'm a journal my thank yous and the things that actually I learned to put a keyword in the journal and say, what I am the most grateful in the past 24 hours that brings you to the present. For one of the things I'm doing, but actually now you're make me think, because I never think in what happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago and that kind of stuff. I think that is ambition, but not in the bad way, like I want everything for me. It's like nature. So something that is not coming across in my resume ever is I lived for 4 years between the frontier between Argentina and Brazil in the rainforest. So pretty much my house, well, not my house, my parent house, was 100 yards from literally the black rainforest. Black, I mean that actually you cannot see through. So it's so thick that actually you if you don't go with somebody that knows the area, you get lost there because you cannot see where you are after walking, like, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes into a rainforest. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the path of the marks that they leave, you get lost forever. Wow. So literally, the rainforest suck you in, and you don't know where to get to exit. The amazing thing about that is that the city council of our little town used to have these big bulldozers with chains, like were big, like a torso of a man, and they they will go with this bulldozer around the town to avoid the rainforest to go over the town, because it grows so fast that actually you can physically see in a week time how fast it's growing.
Wow.
So every month they have to go and kind of mow the rainforest. So and that's what I mean with ambitions. I that gave me a massive impression that that the world is very, very prosperous. Mm. That is prosperity. I mean, naturally, the world recovers, even if this bulldozer go and destroy everything. A week later, you could see how it's growing again. So that for me was like so if that is done by nature by itself, how much we can do when we can manipulate things, manipulate in a good sense, like I said, for example, in business or in education or human relationships and that kind of stuff. So that I think that this is the nature of my ambition. I say when I started with IT in 96, 98, I went to school, I started programming and that kind of stuff. And I thought, this is amazing. This is amazing things that we can do here. So that push, I think mostly the unconscious push to do things come from that learning, I think. And then when e-commerce started to explode back in, actually, in 98, I wanted to do one of, now it's very common to see this kind of a booking.com or the, I don't know, lastminute.com, that kind of things. And I wanted to do a travel portal, because I say, we are going to decentralize or democratize, whatever you want to call it, the travel agencies. They capture their audience, and they are the guys that have the knowledge. And that, in some way, pushed me to, in some way or how, that obviously didn't work out, but did grab the attention of people in Sabre, which is the GDS from American Airlines. And I my first corporate job was with American Airlines, but not in the travel industry, rather to serve in the travel industry, selling the booking system. Now we can do it online. The same thing that you can do online, before you had to go to a travel agency them to do the process.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is the kind of things that drives you to different areas in life. They say, okay, I have a push to go somewhere. And then the people start to notice that drive, which is is quite selfishly. So I don't have an intent to say take advantage of anything or anybody. It's the nature of exploration, finding things, be amazed about how things can be worked or kind of work. Another example is I think that helps a lot when you have a kind of a capacity. I call it the Candy Crush, not Candy Crush, the Tetris mindset, where you can join and put pieces in places where other people cannot see it, or even if they see it, they don't know how
they
to move the pieces around
to
put it correctly, or they don't have the skills, or they don't have the connections, or they don't have that kind of things. And later, probably we are going to mention other my new ventures, which is corporate advisory boards. One thing that I'm helping somebody is to expand globally, but they were looking for funds, like heavily looking for funds, and they couldn't manage to get the fundraising. And but I say, well, hold on a second. I say there are companies that are looking to service these kind of things. Why we don't look for this company? They already have the infrastructure to resell your products, and we don't have to raise funds. We pretty much have to sign a contract.
Yeah,
and that can initially start to get the ball rolling until the whole thing is proven enough for an investor to say, oh, I like what you're doing. I see some revenue coming in. Perhaps in 18 months or 2 years' time, we might fund this process to you launch your sales teams or your whatever is the case. So that capacity to join dots also helped me. I started to spark my interest to say, probably I would be more valuable helping companies to expand in different areas or unblock them from whatever wherever they are today, than rather being an individual contributor that actually in the corporate world, that actually you have your patch and say, this is my patch, my territory, this is what I have to do. I have my team to help me out. But then you say, what I do with all the things that I can do that today are not used. And so I'm diverted a lot in different angles, but this is perhaps one of the things that started to motivate me to go through different things in throughout the years.
I'm curious, Francisco, if I can go back very slightly.
Yeah.
Why were you living 100 meters away from the Black Forest, the Black Rainforest? I'm kind of curious as to what.
Oh, sure. That was 1974, I think.
Oh, wow.
My father was, he left, he was a pilot in the Air Force, Argentina Air Force. And he left the force and he decided to be a farmer. So, and he was very, very keen into renewables farming.
Oh,
and
wow.
the timber industry was one of the most impacted in that kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought a plot of land. Well, a plot of land, somebody might say in the UK, like a patch. But there in the middle of the forest was it was a massive place.
It was very big.
Fairly big. And he was one of the pioneers doing reforestation for the timber industry, particularly pine.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 70s. And the reason why is because the soil is so rich that they can plant the pine. They have a cycle until before you can cut it for the timber industry, because they need a certain thickness, a certain humidity, certain length in how tall it is. And there is a particular pine that grows very fast and very good in that area. So he decided to go there and move the whole family from a 14th floor apartment in the middle of a city center to the middle of nowhere.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I mean, obviously I grew up in Derby, which is, you know, it's a very beige town in the middle of England. Never experiencing anything like that. So that must have been quite impactful. And I can see how your drive to sort of grow beyond that and learn beyond that, I can see why that would be in those kind of situations. And I liked your Tetris thinking analogy, you know, your the ability to join dots and sort of put stuff together. What's been your biggest success as a result, do you think?
Probably not in the corporate world, but mostly with my son and my daughter. I think I'm an awful parent. Nobody teaches you how to be a parent.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah,
and pretty much you learn as you go along, pushed, and I think that pushed by your own children needs, if you may.
Mm.
So very grateful, because all very healthy children, very intelligent, at least for my perception of intelligence. but at the same time, both very rebel, if you may. So they wanted to experiment things at early ages and doing things actually at least in my interpretation of a parenting or education, I say, why are you going to do that? No way. But I learned, also I learned quite, particularly in teenagers, when they were teenagers, the thing that I learned, particularly with my I have a son and a daughter, particularly with my son, I learned that actually it's not about restricting them, it's about giving more tools assess situations, mm-hmm. not be influenced by the circumstances and the peer group, and have their own personality. And I don't mean personality being like on the phone, like an influencer, that kind of thing. So personality in saying, I'm saying no because I know why I'm saying no.
Yeah.
And I'm saying yes, why I'm saying yes. And this is why I'm saying yes to something, or why I decide not to get involved in anything at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that was my biggest success because both my son and my daughter, they are quite independent, happily now financially. And my son only called me once and again. He's 28 years old. He's still living in Ireland. He has his own job. He's developing his career in 3D design for video gaming. He never rings. The mother is not happy. but I say, okay, what's going on with this guy? And I have to ring him and say, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I say, I'm fine, what do you want?
Yeah.
And say, okay.
Stay in touch, but
no calls. Yeah, stay in touch. Calls, everything's fine. But he calls now and again. But the interesting thing that now he's calling for things that actually are how he develops relationships to create his own studio. How he network with people, so it's more in the business side. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, now he already explored what it means being employed. I'm quite happy now that he's exploring and say how I develop my own business. My daughter is finishing master's now also in art, digital art, which is 2D design to do movies, cartoon, that kind of stuff. And he's connected. She learned from the mistake from the other guy, and she's going very fast into connecting with people very quickly.
Right.
She's still living with us, and 24 years old. So I know her. She's alive when she wakes up around 11 in the evening. When I'm going to bed, she's waking up. But I guess that actually is normal at that age.
That age again, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So I say, oh, she said good morning, I say good night.
It's really, I love that how when I asked you what's been your biggest success, you immediately go to your family.
Yeah.
I can't begin to tell you, the amount of podcasts I've been on and people, talk about success, what is success for you? And I always maintain that I want to succeed at home first. And I think if I can do that, well, that's a really interesting, I count life to be successful. I have three kids.
Yeah.
My middle child, my youngest son, at the moment, he's on a beach in Jersey lifeguarding, which is a brilliant summer job. He's getting paid to sit on the beach, rescue people and do workouts, basically. It's his ideal life. And I think if I didn't call him, there's no way he would call me all summer. He's so into what he's doing, which is great. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things, if I look back over it, Francisco, one of the biggest things I think we've done well in teaching our kids is the art of resilience, to be resilient. And I think it's super, super important, the ability to network, to hustle, to make a pound. We never actually paid our kids pocket money when they were growing up.
It was quite impressive.
We didn't do it. What we said to the kids was, listen, if you come up with a business idea and I like the business idea, I'll invest in it and we'll see what happens. So my eldest son, when he was, I think maybe 8-9 years old, he decided he was going to set up his first business, which was a chicken business. And so we built a chicken coop in the garden. We went and bought some chickens. I invested in the business. And he looked after the chickens. He cleaned them out. He fed them. He bought the food and he sold the eggs. And that's how he made his money, And it was, it's that it is that desire to teach a kid something which is going to take them beyond yourself, isn't it, really? And I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to say you've done.
Yeah, well, thank you. But I like that. I think that is a key word there with this resilience, because it's many, many things that happen in the middle between the idea to saying, I've done it. Well, I'm making it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always mean cash in the bank. Sometimes means that the idea has been accepted, or then how you fund it, or how, for example, the Amazon business. We started, when I started to do white labeling, at the end it ended up being three brands. But at the very beginning, I started to, the first thing that I've done was to source the material from other people importing into the UK. I was living in Ireland at the time, so where tea towers. But I wanted a very specific, it was a learning curve also, what is a good tea towel and what about the tea towel, what is a bad tea towel, so the plastic, the polyester, whatever is okay. So I wanted cotton, certain amount of threads, 100 threads per square centimeter, well, all these technicalities. My wife helped a lot there because she was saying, I don't like this one. So we went to Tesco's and bought a lot of tea towels and said, which is the best one? So which one we want to sell? So in thinking, so it was a small steps until we finally went to China. Well, we went first to Pakistan, but then we find out in China was a better value in terms of quantity, price, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the quality was pretty much the same. But until we develop to outsource pretty much the whole operation, so I was two people moving containers between China, the Europe, and the US. We were packaging it in our sitting room at home, and my brother that was living just around the corner was saying, "You're absolutely nuts! Why are you doing this? There's no point to doing these kind of things." But I think that it's a joy also to what people call the journey. I don't think it's really a journey personally. I think that it's something that you have to do, and how you treat it is perhaps a journey. The journey. And actually, I have an analogy. Sorry, I'm diverting a lot about
yes.
But I have an analogy that somebody showed me once, and I said that's quite interesting. So there's a family going to Disney World, and from home to Disney World is a kind of a trip of like a couple of hours. So you have two children in the back of the car, and one guy is, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? So all the time asking for the time. So the goal is exactly the same. The destination is exactly the same. The purpose is exactly the same. But one guy is all the time thinking, I have to get there now. The other son or daughter is just watching the window. Oh, look at this. Oh, I love this. Oh, look at cow. Oh, no, I see a horse or whatever. So enjoying this stuff. So is any difference in the time lapse and in the purpose, in the destination? There's no difference. One guy has a very, very stressful way to see things. I want to be there right now.
Yeah.
And the other guy was like a trust in the process, as they call it too. I trust the process. Sometimes it's very hard to trust the process. So then you stress out with the destination or the objective or the goal. What happened in the middle? The car breaks down. So it's a massive delay. So the guy that is, are we there yet, get massively frustrated, anger, start to get aggressive, et cetera, et cetera. And the other guy will say, oh, look at tall truck. I want to go into the cabin. Hey, Mr. Tall Truck Driver, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. So even with circumstances that makes the apparently the circumstances difficult towards what we want to achieve or we want to get there, is how we treat the environment or the situation, the circumstances. And this I learned from Wallace D. Wallet. I cannot pronounce that name. Back to the conversation at the beginning of the podcast.
The older guys,
Is a guy that wrote a booklet that is called The Science of Getting Rich. It's only, I think, 80 pages. You can read it in one sitting. It's an amazing book. It's a very little booklet, but it's quite impressive. You have an audiobook in YouTube if you don't want to read.
I'll check it out.
And one of the things that this guy is saying that actually really, really impacted me was saying exactly that thing about his analogy of the children going to Disney World. Was that I say people have to focus in the living the achievement, and mm-hmm. whatever is going on with you in the circumstances, the daily circumstances, doesn't really matter, and you shouldn't be worried at all mm-hmm. with what's going on. So setbacks, frustrations, or this is not working, so we have technical issues at the beginning. That's fine. We're going to sort it out. We cannot sort it out now. That, no worries. We can schedule another time. Mm. But people get very frustrated and angry.
They do. But, is that why you do gratitude journaling?
Sorry?
Is that why you do gratitude journaling?
Yeah.
You write down what you're thankful for, but it just brings you back to the present. You're like the kid in the back of the car enjoying the journey, being grateful for what is actually going on in the moment rather than being constantly frustrated that you're not where you think you should be.
Yeah, and I actually did a PowerPoint, also not to forget what I'm grateful for. Mm. The five things I'm looking for today can be something that is... I ended up writing the five things I'm looking every single day. So and I do that first thing in the morning. I wake up around 6. Every day, not every day, but mostly that's my usual time because I like early compared to my youth. I now prefer early mornings.
I found the same thing. As I've got older, I get up earlier. I don't know what that's all about.
And with a nice coffee early morning, the window of my office, my home office, is facing the, I live in a little village outside Barcelona. So I can see the square. Mm-hmm. So it's a fountain, the church and everything. So I can see the rise of the morning, if you may. And the first thing that I do is my journaling. That's my what I call my day attitude towards today. What would be my attitude? And the things I'm looking for is the five things I'm looking for. So one of them is, this is one of the things I don't quite remember exactly the wording, but actually one is I have to respond to people during the day. So it doesn't matter what message is coming through. I have to commit to respond to people during the day. Mm-hmm. The other one is this is my life in an average day of my ideal life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just having this, back to the journey going to the day. Yeah. So if this is a day... or an average day in my ideal life right now, right here, like having this conversation with you, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because then I'm already leaving my destination.
Yeah, exactly.
So then that completely changed the way that you see things, how you treat people, how you interact with people, how you see things through. And then I have another few things, actually. Not for the podcast because they're quite private. more related to my goals and my aspirations, etc. But these two things can be shared because coming back to people is very important. I think it's respectful because if you're delaying things to say, oh, I come back because I'm too busy. So somebody bothered to message you in any way, like a WhatsApp or email or LinkedIn or whatever. So at least have the finesse is the word.
The courtesy.
Yeah, say, listen, too busy right now. I come back to you tomorrow in two hours, whatever. I don't mean right away answer, but 2 hours later, it doesn't really matter. But I say, yeah, I receive. Sometimes I put these messages. I receive your message. Bear with me. I come back to you.
Yeah.
And then I make
that's just politeness, isn't it? It's just common courtesy. And I think it's a good idea. Listen, Francisco, I'm aware of time. I feel like we could just talk for hours and hours and hours, and we maybe should one day around a beer. I think in Barcelona would be quite nice.
Yeah.
If people want to find out more about you, I know you're into mergers and acquisitions, and you're getting involved in that whole side of things.
Yeah.
What's the best way for people to do that?
I'll say LinkedIn is the first protocol, if you may. I have LinkedIn on my phone. I have LinkedIn on my PC. So in the laptop, wherever I go, if I see a message in LinkedIn, a connection or something, I answer. In the day, I'm LinkedIn 3 or 4 times a day. Mm. So that's the first protocol, if you may. And then we take the conversation from there. It depends what it is. And lately, I'm having like a 3 lines of communications. People are looking for funds that I can help. People looking to do business, which we have to look what kind of business is. I'm mostly focusing in the UK now. Because I think this is a very, very, very interesting market today to work in the UK. Also, yeah. The legislation and the maturity of the people doing business in the UK, I love it. It's particularly for my nature of being a house called. I love the UK because when they say no, it's no. When they say yes, it's yes. And there's no wiggle in the middle. I'm from Argentina. I live in Ireland 18 years, and Irish people is famous for this thing. They say, leave it with me, and there's no end for that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
When I come back to you, when I answer this, which is lovely, but sometimes in business it's very frustrating. Because mm-hmm. They say, leave it with you, but what's next day?
Yeah, what does that mean? I need to know right now, please. Brilliant. Listen, Francisco, it's been a genuine joy chatting to you, man. Loved hearing your story, loved hearing about the family and your gratitude journaling and how even the analogy of the Disney car. And I'm going to find that booklet and I'm going to download that. We will, of course, link to you in the show notes as well. So if you want to reach out to Francisco, do check him. Do that. Just reach out on LinkedIn. Great guy. Great, great guy. But Francisco, thank you. Thanks for coming on the show, man. It's been a genuine treat and I've genuinely loved it.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate the invitation because I probably say things that I would normally not do or say, which is the family. I keep it quite private, but I feel very, very comfortable in your show and I appreciate that.
Oh, super kind of you, man.
Welcome.
Well, that's a wrap on another brilliant conversation. A huge thanks to Francisco for joining Matt on the show and for being willing to share so openly about his inspiring journey. A huge thanks to today's sponsor, PodJunction. For all you change makers out there contemplating podcasting as your new tool for networking and growing your business, definitely connect with them at podjunction.com. For transcripts or show notes, swing by our website, pushtobemore.com. Thank you for tuning in and for being part of our journey. Have a great week and we'll catch you on the flip side. Until then, keep pushing to be more.